Hello, it is June 2nd, 2014. This is episode 425 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. Today's death, Lou Gehrig, who died June 2nd, 1941. On June 2nd, 1925, Gehrig replaced Wally Pipp in the Yankees lineup. On April 23rd, 1933, he was hit in the skull with a pitch and knocked unconscious. It happened again in June 1934. A month later, he was stricken with what was known as a lumbago attack in the middle of the game and had to be assisted off the field. The next day, he was listed as the shortstop, batted once, and then left for a pinch runner to rest his ailing back. It is speculated that following many, that this was the first symptom of his disease. He began the 1939 season 4-for-28 and found that even when he squared up the ball, he couldn't hit it out of the infield. He at last sat out the next game and never played again, ending his streak at 2,130 games. A month later, he was diagnosed with ALS on his 36th birthday, and he had his famous luckiest man on the face of the earth just a few days after. 2 years later, 16 years to the day that he took over for Wally Pipp, he died in his home. He was 37 years old. The Gehrigs had no children, and his wife never remarried. She died in 1984. Here in Athens, it is merely Monday. I'm Will Leach. I thank you for spending part of your day with me. It is getting exciting. It's becoming this is like the last little gasp of crazy excitement of the sporting year before we have that little couple of months to chill out over the summer, and then football gets going, and everybody starts losing their mind again, and then the World Series gets here. Anyway, so the next couple of weeks are pretty exciting. We're going to have, of course, the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs and, of course, the World Cup, which next week we're doing a full week's worth of World Cup shows, which should be exciting. I hope you like that. Today, though, we need to preview the Stanley Cup. And you know my go-to guy on that. It's Joe D'Alessio, Sports on Earth hockey writer, and my colleague, longtime colleague at New York Magazine. He's still a senior producer there as well. And he's also a Rangers fan, though. I'm going to try not to make too good a deal out of that, though. I'm sure he's losing his mind. All right, Mr. Dusso, good morning. Thanks for doing this. I know that we were a little early this morning, and the game went kind of late last night. You stood up and saw the whole thing, right? I don't need to tell you who won.
No, I'm awake. I'm ready to go.
Okay, good. I'm not quite, because I said watch the game. Of course, the Kings won in overtime in kind of a weird finish. It wasn't so much that it was a kind of a crazy game back and forth, and to have it end on not necessarily a fluke goal, but just kind of a weird bounce. So I guess that's relatively normal.
Yeah, I mean, that's how these things usually, you know, end up, especially. And it was such a good series, too. And, you know, it's funny, they kept mentioning all going into the overtime. You know, this is the first Game 7 conference final to go into overtime since 1994. And, of course, that's one of the great series, you know, of all time. And, of course, that ended also on a fluke goal. So I guess that's how these things kind of go.
So, and it's funny. Now, I have to say, so these two teams have now won 4 of the last 5 Western Conferences and the last 3. Do you think, you know, I know it seems kind of silly on these things, but do you think that this was kind of the, you know, did this stand for who was the best team in the Western Conference has been the last 5 years? And does it matter that the Blackhawks have won 2 championships and Kings have won 1? Did the Kings need this to kind of like assert that that the team of the last half decade in the Western Conference?
Well, I don't know that I would say that they're even now the team of the last half decade. I guess if they win the Cup, you'd put them in that discussion. I think, you know, I don't know that there was really anybody who looked at their Cup win as a fluke or anything like that, even though that kind of came out of nowhere. They were, you know, great also last year.
Yeah, weren't they an 8 seed that year?
They got hot at the right time, but then they were also really good last year, and they were also very good this year. So I think even if they'd lost last night, it's not like we'd be looking at them as, you know, some team that really, you know, had one decent season and that's it, or one good season and that's it. So
how have they been constructed differently since that kind of, not to call it a fluke season, but certainly they weren't dominant in the regular season the way they've been kind of the last couple of years. What have they done to kind of put their team together and get them to this point?
Well, it's not a drastically different roster since then. I think obviously the big move this season was acquiring Marian Gaborik, who's been great for them in the playoffs. That gave them just a little extra scoring punch. And I think against Chicago, that, you know, they needed it. It's not like they have just a drastically different roster than they had 2 years ago. They had a lot, mostly the same roster last year too.
So looking at last night, did you while watching that game? I have to say, I really thought Chicago was going to win. I still felt like it felt like that crowd. I guess every time you're watching a sudden death playoff game, sudden death elimination game, it always feels like the home team's going to win because the crowd is so crazy. But certainly, what did you see that coming in? Like, who'd you predict before the series, and as the game is going on, where did you have them?
I thought Chicago was the slightly stronger team coming in, and even as the series, especially as sort of the series went on, they kind of inched their way in there. I thought they would do it last night. And you're right. As soon as that crowd starts going, you expect it to sort of take over, but that doesn't always happen in the playoffs. So I mean, you see, it's especially a team like the Kings who've been there, you know, who've won road game sevens, who've gone to the finals, who've upset teams. I mean, that's a, you know, that if any team's going to do it, it's a team like them.
All right. So now we're going to do two more things, because this is the Stanley Cup finals start on Wednesday. We're going to look at these two different ways. The first is we're going to pretend that we live in a world where there are no rooting interests, there is no history, there is just simply two hockey teams playing against each other.
Sure.
We're going to do that first. And so you can restrain everything and then explode once I open up the floodgates to the real discussion of this. Because the finals start Wednesday night in Los Angeles, right? They start in L.A.?
Yeah, they start in L.A. The Rangers would not have had home ice against either of these teams.
And this is 2-2-1-1-1?
Yeah.
Okay. So it starts in Los Angeles, and let's talk about the Rangers a little bit. You know, you wrote a good piece for New York Magazine. You know, because I remember a few years ago, and I discussed this with Katie Baker when she was on a few weeks ago, about that time that you wrote about, also for New York Magazine back then, of when the Rangers were hot and all of a sudden Jim Dolan showed up and all of a sudden freaking out Rangers fans. You kind of touched on that moment, but in this last piece, you kind of made, I think, a pretty solid argument that the reason that the Rangers have been able to do this is because Dolan has stayed out of the way.
Yeah, well, first of all, I haven't slept well since you guys talked about that, because it's really all I can think of. Turning to yes, it's just a just...
You're waiting for him to show up. You're waiting for him to waddle in.
Right. No, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is Dolan sort of let. I mean, it's what any owner should do, is let the people he hires to make decisions actually make the decisions. And you know, I don't think Jim. He's not overruling Glenn Sather. He's not ordering hires and fires and stuff like that. You know, maybe he's involved in some, I'm sure he's in on meetings because he's the guy who signs the checks, but he's not, you know, he's notorious for kind of making decisions for the Knicks and overruling his GMs. And that's not happening with the Rangers. So it's the first step in them actually having a good team over the years, is because they can actually make decisions based on like hockey and not like Jim Dolan's, you know, wishes.
And this, of course, has been being built for a while, but you know they've had a couple setbacks. This has not been like a completely linear upward run here. It feels like regular season wise, they actually had a better season a couple of years ago, and I think like even before last year, some people had them as the preseason predicted the champs. This is not the year that people thought they were going to make the Stanley Cup Finals the last couple of years. What's different? What went wrong a couple of years ago, and what's gone right in these playoffs?
Well, it sort of depends on how you look at it, because if you were to say like 3 years ago, what year are the Rangers going to finally break through and make their run? You probably would have picked this year or last year. Like if you looked at how they were being built, you would have said they were maybe 2 or 3 years away. And this is about when you think they'd do it, except that you're right, they had that setback last year. So they definitely had the better regular season in 2012 and went into those playoffs as, if not the favorite, like one of the maybe two favorites to come out of the East. And right, last year they had the setback. What's different, obviously, this year is that they've got a new coach, they've got a new system, they have a team that doesn't sort of hate their coach. They're playing a style, more sort of offensive, up-tempo, north-south style that is actually better for the team that they built already. There were a lot of players playing under Tortorella who actually didn't really fit his system. So now they're able to sort of play their game a little bit better. They've gotten better as the season's gone on. They didn't start the season out great. Henrik Lundqvist didn't start the season out great. And things started to come together sort of mid-season, and then by the end they were actually playing pretty decent hockey. And then, you know, obviously, and then of course everyone, you know, they looked like, not, you know, for what it's worth, they looked like they were finished 3 weeks ago against Pittsburgh. And then obviously they, you know, everything seems to have come together since then.
If is the coach, has the coaching difference made that, is that what it's been? Because, you know, I mean, I always kind of liked Tortorella just because he was so cranky. He's kind of a fun guy to watch at post game conferences. But did they need a more stabling influence?
I don't know. I mean, I think from what you hear that Tortorella had sort of, you know, to use the cliche, sort of lost the room by the end. And that's a sort of a toxic situation. I think if you go back 2 years ago, I was always in the impression they actually liked playing for Tortorella. So I think it's part of that. I think part of it too is that they are actually just playing a different kind of hockey now that is better suited for them. It's also, I think, better suited for winning in the playoffs. I don't know that you can win a cup. I mean, they still block a ton of shots, but that was like their whole game was based on just like playing this physical sort of, not so much physical, but just sort of sacrificing your body and blocking shots. And offense was, you know, you had to work so hard to score a goal. And you know, now they play a little bit, you know, it's actually a little bit more entertaining to watch, but it's a little bit more sustainable, I think, over the course of like 2.5 months.
And how much of this is the advantage that they have of having Lundqvist? Is he at the top of his game now? There is this sense, you know, someone is a star when people are like, wow, he finally made it. His day has finally come to make the finals. And he's only been around for 9 years. Like it's not like this is like some 20-year guy or so on. Is he really the difference for this team?
Oh yeah, I mean he's not the only reason they're here, but right. They wouldn't be here if not for Lundqvist. He's been really good. I mean, you hear some questions about, oh, you know, he hadn't played well in games in which the Rangers could eliminate their opponent before game 7. So I guess he had some, like, these weird sort of specific things.
That's an oddly specific criticism.
Right. I mean, whereas, you know, his record in game 7s is, oh, you know, out of this world. So, I mean, he's maybe had something to prove. I don't know that the reason that they hadn't gotten to the finals before was because of him. I think it's just he couldn't, you know, they didn't quite have the team to get there. But yeah, I mean, this team isn't gonna do anything without Lundqvist. He's been great this spring.
It does feel like the moment where it kind of turned around for this team, at least in kind of an emotional or narrative sense, was when Martin St. Louis scored that goal on Mother's Day, right? Is that when it was, right after his mom had died?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that has that been the sense? Am I getting that corrected? Like, does feel like that was when, because they were down 3-1 at that time or close to it, and it seems like that's when they've kind of taken off since then.
Yeah, it was really the game before that. So his mother passed away between games 4 and 5 of that series. Game 4 of that series was as bad as they've looked all spring easily, and maybe even since all season, or certainly since the beginning of the season. They looked just absolutely terrible in game 4. They were, you know, near Rick Nash was booed at the Garden. St. Louis was booed at the Garden. And they looked like they were finished. And then game 5, they played one of their best games of the playoffs, and his mother died in between those two games. So, you know, it does seem, I know it sounds like a sort of sports writer narrative that, you know, but they really do seem like they've rallied around him, and they started playing better the day he returned to the team for that game 5. And then he scores that goal on Mother's Day in game 6, and then they win game 7. And then, you know, Montreal is, you know, he goes home to Montreal that weekend. You know, they win games 1 and 2 the same weekend of, you know, around the weekend of his mother's funeral. And then, the team kind of just went from there.
All right, so now we should probably look at the Rangers and Kings themselves. First off, what was kind of the take, the look at Gaborik when he was with the Rangers? Now that he's playing so great for the Kings and we'll be facing them in the finals.
Well, Gaborik was pretty good for the Rangers. I mean, he pretty much was what they signed him for. And considering some of the free agent disasters they've had in the last, like, 10 years, like, to have a guy like Gaborik score, I think he scored 40 goals twice for them. Like, he was pretty good. The one thing that kind of held him back a little bit was you got the sense that Tortorella never quite knew what to do with him. He was always – they spent the whole time he was here trying to find line mates he had chemistry with and have – you know, he wasn't exactly Tortorella's – style of forward, but you need a guy who can score. You need a guy who just doesn't, you know, block shots and score 15 goals. So, you know, they never quite knew what to do with Gaborik. And, you know, when they moved him, I think it was a combination of, you know, him not quite fitting with Tortorella's system, because they traded him to Columbus when they still had, when Tortorella was still coaching, and a need for depth. And, you know, they have three guys they got in that trade who are now, you know, on their playoff roster. So, you know, it wasn't a terrible trade for them. But yeah, I mean, you could see flashes of this Gabbert. You could see this Gabbert playing at times with the Rangers. The consistency wasn't always there. And I think, you know, if he'd been playing under Vigneault, he probably would have, he'd probably still be with the team, frankly. Yeah. But yeah, that was a great pickup for Los Angeles, because he's been great.
Is there, what about the styles the two teams to play? Are we going to have a high scoring series like we had in the Western Conference Finals, or are we looking at, is it going to be a Lundqvist quick battle it out sort of thing?
I think it'll be more along those lines, in part because obviously you have maybe the two best goalies in the league, and two good defensive teams just in general. The Rangers are among the leaders in goals against, and that's mostly Lundqvist, but it's not just Lundqvist. They have some good defensemen, and obviously the Kings have Drew Doughty and some other guys who, you know, they can. So these teams will both be able to stop teams from scoring. I think the thing to remember, though, is that the Rangers aren't quite as offensively dangerous as Chicago is. So I don't know that they're going to be playing a lot of 5-4 games in the series. If they're giving up 5 goals, they're going to be in trouble. You know, Los Angeles, I think, is certainly more capable of putting up big numbers in terms of goals than the Rangers are. You know, the Rangers' leading scorers have something like 13 points, whereas, you know, Marian Gabrick has like 12 goals alone. So, I mean, it's, you know, they're not a bad offense team. They're certainly not they don't struggle to score as much as previous Rangers teams did, but I don't think they really want to be getting into, for as up-tempo style as they play, they don't want to be getting into very high-scoring games. And I don't think they will in the series. I think the defense will be the story.
All right, so Vegas currently has the Kings as the favorite going into the series. Does that sound right? Is that the general consensus that the Kings should be the favorite?
Yeah, I think actually whoever had come out of the West would have been the favorite. I think the Rangers are you know, an underdog. I mean, they're the underdog in the series. They're not. This isn't like a fluke of a run for them, but they're certainly not going to be favored over a team that was better than them in the regular season and has the postseason sort of success already behind them, that they know they can win a cup. So yeah, I don't think there was any doubt that LA would be a favorite in the series.
So is the key to this series Lundqvist, as always? Or is it he the guy, you know, you're going to get out of him, and there's somebody else that really needs to step up for the Rangers?
Well, for the record, Lundqvist has had one or two games in the season in the playoffs where he wasn't great.
Cut him.
He's bounced back with two of his best games after them. So I mean, there's no guarantee he'll be great in every single game. I think overall he'll be great in the finals. But I think you need actually a lot more than Lundqvist, unless he's just unbeatable and doesn't give up a goal, which is, you know, not going to happen every night. The Rangers need to be able to score. And for that to happen, they need, you know, they've been getting pretty good production out of their sort of depth players. Their third and fourth lines have actually been pretty good. But at some point, you need Rick Nash to break out. He really hasn't done a whole lot, at least in terms of scoring in these playoffs. You need Marty San Luis to be good again. He was a little bit quiet in the last two games, one of which they won, one of which they didn't. So, the Rangers need their sort of big guns to do some scoring and then continue to get the good production out of, you know, their lines deeper down, continue to get, you know, they've had a couple of hiccups defensively in front of Lundqvist. You'll need to really tighten that up against a team that's a whole lot more dangerous than Montreal is, or was. So
was, yeah, they died, they destroyed them.
They are no more.
So okay, this is enough serious analytical talk. It's been 20 years, man. Are you losing your shit?
You know, it's funny. It was so different than 20 years ago, because 20 years ago, like, they were just completely expected to win, and then you thought they were going to blow it, and then they didn't blow it, and then they won. So like there was a real expectation, whereas this team had really no expectations until like 3 weeks ago. Like, this came out of nowhere. Like, they were done against Pittsburgh. I thought they were done. Everyone thought they were done. And I was there in game four, and I watched that team get booed off the ice. I mean, they looked as bad as I've seen them, and I never thought they were going to.
That was 3 weeks ago that they were getting booed off the ice.
It was like 3 weeks ago. I don't know exactly how long, but it was about three. It was, you know, middle of the, you know, two series ago. And then all of a sudden, you know, they go on this run. And then Montreal, I think, you know, I think they caught a break not having to play Boston. I don't think they would have beaten Boston. I think they, you know, I think they got beat pretty handily by Boston last year, and they didn't want any part of that. So I think Montreal was, you know, a different look and a team, you know, that I don't think is quite the postseason success history as Boston does. So I think that helped them out. And then, yeah, once they won those first two games against Montreal, then you could sort of start to really think, like, you know what, they actually could win this series. Like, they actually could get to the finals. And then you're sort of just waiting for them to blow it, you know, like, or at least make things difficult on themselves, because it's been years since they won a series in anything less than seven games. So to accomplish that is, you know, as surprising as anything else that they've done.
And I guess that's what I mean is, you know, when you look at when it comes out of nowhere like this, have you even had a moment as a fan to downshift yet, or is it still just you're still just kind of floating and kind of you know me, this is going to come as a surprise to you, but I'm going to relate it a little bit to the Cardinals.
I thought you would, actually, because it's similar.
It feels a little, it's funny, to me it feels more similar to 06. Yeah. Than 11, because I guess everyone assumes you're done. There's a lot of that in 11. But 06, it was just like no one thought this was going to be the team. No one thought this was going to – they thought former teams were going to be the ones that did it. And then but, of course, a lot of that happened too because other teams fell apart, which I think is something – you know, the Cardinals got good matchups in those series. So that's kind of how it feels to me, is that, like, you almost – in 06, you just couldn't believe it was happening. Then all of a sudden, you were there. Does it feel like that?
Yeah, and what's weird, you've prepared yourself over the last few years for this team to be good enough to do this. Like, you've seen them get better, you know they're good. It's just, yeah, this did not seem like it was going to be the year. It seemed like every other year where they, you know, win a round and then go out quietly in the second round. So it kind of, you know, we've seen that movie before. And then, yeah, and then of course, then everything goes crazy after that. It was, you would not have seen it coming.
Is there a sense among, you know, you, not only you, but of course, you know, everyone, I always assume that, you know, that I'm the one, you're the one sports fan friend of yours that's not a Rangers fan. And, like, I figure you have a crew to talk about this. Is there a sense, do they need to win now? Or are you just kind of like, is the idea that, like, I can't believe they're in the finals. And we were booing them 3 weeks ago.
I think they're, when it's all said and done, if they do lose the finals, there will be a sense that this was still a great, successful season. You know, the Rangers don't get to the finals often. So I think even if they do lose, this will have been a successful run. Having said that, I think everyone is kind of primed. I think everyone is sort of, you know, figuring if they got this far, why not get further? And I certainly... you know, my friends of mine I don't get the sense that they're happy right now with just getting to the finals. So
it was 79. That was the last time before 94 that they did it.
Yeah, it was 79. And then I think it was 72 before that. So, I mean,
so this is the second of your lifetime and the third of mine.
Yeah.
Right. I don't remember 79. I do remember 94. How well do you remember 94?
I remember 94 pretty well. I turned 10 that year, which is just old enough to kind of remember everything. That's a good time also to be, like, you know, to start getting totally obsessed with a team or whatever. So, like, so A, you remember it as it happened, and B, any Rangers fan, you know, is lying if they haven't watched, like, you know, game seven of the finals 600 times since then. So it's like anything you don't actually remember happening live, you've seen it since. You've watched all the highlight videos and all of that. So, I mean, you can piece together things you don't quite remember because you were, you know, 9.5 years old.
And who's the Messier of this team? Who's the iconic guy that skates the trophy along the ice after they win?
Well, this is a question. Well, I think the most iconic player they have is Lundqvist. He, you know, but there is a question of who would... you know, not to look too far ahead of who would be given that cup. Actually doesn't have a captain because they traded their captain mid-season.
That'll happen. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Saint-Louis compares to Messier in the sense that he was brought in from the outside, and it will be seen as the sort of guy who changed everything, even though he was mostly brought in just because of circumstances required them to trade Ryan Callahan. You know, I think that you know, this is a, you know, I don't know exactly if they have, I mean, certainly they don't have anyone of Messier's stature. But I think Lundqvist is probably the sort of most iconic player, certainly the one that, you know, the people who aren't hockey fans know, the one who's kind of waited the longest of, I think he's the longest tenured player on this team. Certainly he was drafted the longest ago.
All right, so now I know this is a silly thing to ask someone that cares as much as you, but I have to do it. What's your prediction?
My prediction is that the Kings will win.
You think the Kings will win?
I honestly would have picked either of the teams in the West. Not even just that you expect this to kind of end for the Rangers, but you realize that the sort of the Rangers' depth lines have been playing a little bit over their heads. I think that they could, you might not see them be quite so effective against a really good team like LA, but mostly the Rangers, I suspect, against a really good team and against a really, really good goalie, will have some trouble scoring. And you look at the sort of top two or three forwards, let alone the top five or six forwards for LA, and they're just in a different class than the Rangers' top guys. At least they're performing in a different class. San Luis is probably the closest to that, but Rick Nash has been quiet. You know, Brad Richards has been pretty good, but compared to what, you know, Kopitar and Gabrick and all these guys are doing, I mean, that's a really dangerous team. Having said that, the Rangers, I think the Rangers want to kind of steal at least one of the games early because they're going to be more rested. You know, the Rangers have played, I think, 20 games. The Kings have actually played more, and they've played more recently. So if the Rangers can get a game early, win a game on the road, you could see a way for it to happen. But I think they really need to do that. I don't think they want to be coming home 0-2 because then they'll be in trouble.
All right, man. Well, I'll be thinking about you this week.
Well, thank you, sir.
I'm really hoping it turns out. I have just from attending Rangers games with you, I have several Rangers paraphernalia. My son has a Kreider.
Kreider. I remember when you bought that, actually.
Yeah, I have a little Kreider teddy bear. He's got a little Kreider teddy bear. Because that was when I thought Kreider, that was like his rookie. That was right the year after he just showed up in the playoffs.
Right.
So we all thought, he still could be good. He's not like 40.
He's actually been good for them. So he's been one of the reasons, you know, you look at when they sort of turn things around against Pittsburgh and, you know, besides the team sort of rallying around San Luis and all of that, Kreider came back from injury and he's been great. He's perfect for the sort of system. And he gave Montreal trouble that whole series. So he's actually one of the big reasons they've been winning here. So
well, then I will if my son tries to play with that bear, I will grab him away, even as he screams, and say, no, this bear is needed for the playoffs. I will put him on a shrine in front of my television, and as I hear the wails of my son in the other room.
That's just good parenting.
Yes, of course. But I don't know why I got him anything in the first place. All right, well, good luck, man. I'm thinking and enjoy the Stanley Cup. They start Wednesday, and I guess and the last day I think could be, I think the last day is like the 19th. Game 7 would be on the 19th or
I think it's the 18th.
The 18th. Okay. So, all right. Well, good luck. Enjoy, and well, I'm sure we'll be seeing your stuff all over the place at both Sports on Earth and New York Magazine. And enjoy this, man. This is no matter what happens. Again, my last Cardinal related thing. All told, I'm glad the Cardinals made the World Series last year, even if they lost. And no matter what happens, it's awesome that your team is in the Stanley Cup Finals. And and you never know, maybe they'll pull it off.
Thank you.
All right, be safe, man. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right, thank you to Joe D'Alessio. You can follow him on Twitter at Joe D'Alessio, JoeDelessio. Of course, watch the Stanley Cup Finals on Wednesday. That'll be kind of enjoyable. Big cities. I like it when big cities play. No offense, Ottawa. Actually, Ottawa may be big. I really don't know Canada at all. Anyway, this has been the Willich Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Tuesday's guest, first-time guest, I'm very excited to have on, John Heyman. He's the baseball writer for CBS Sports and the baseball insider for the MLB Network. I'll be excited to have him on and chat about all sorts of fun business. I will chat with him and you tomorrow.